Good morning, everybody. Today is just a great day, but it's a really special day because I get to interview somebody really cool. My name's Stu Turley, President and CEO of the Sandstone Group, and I'm here with Colby Teef. And he's a fantastic guy on social media. He's got bazillions of followers, and he is over here with Presidio Energy. And I've been able to kind of really have a great conversation with him until he turned his camera on, and I noticed there was an OU football sitting behind him. So everything up to that point, we were having a great conversation. Welcome, Colby, and I sure appreciate you.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me on. My girlfriend is a OU or OSU alumni. I share with people that in our relationships, we click on a bedlam mode whenever there's an opportunity to watch the two teams compete. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, how fun. Now you caveat on the other side. And I absolutely love, like Steve Reese with Reese Consulting. He is an avid OU guy. And I love Steve. I love the OU-OSU relationship. And it just, I hope that we can continue with OU going to the SEC. So sure hope so.
Me too. And the stage is that the foundation is there. And I think a lot of success for the long term is in the future for the University of Oklahoma.
Okay. Now with Presidio, you guys are out there. And I noticed on your website, I was looking at it and I really like you're in the marketing side of it, right?
So I'm a career energy marketer. I grew up wanting to be in the industry at a young age, and a corny story that I share at the bar anytime I'm at one of these conventions and events. But I went to OU to become an energy marketer. I'm one of 19 of the initial class of energy marketing students. May of 2000, been an energy marketer for 23 years now. And it's amazing how time flies. I've seen the ups and the downs, probably just like you.
Yeah, but you have hair. So for my podcast listeners, I mean, they know my hair is flesh colored and yours is really good looking. I mean, Brad Pitt kind of good looking. So, you know,
I think that a lot of the ups and downs in this industry have caused a lot of the gray in some of this. And I can tell you that it's going to stick around with me for a long time.
There are some really cool things in your company's slogans, and that is, we are the last best steward of America's oil and gas wells. Where did that come from?
You know, I think from a philosophy of being able to take over production that, you know, might have been overlooked in the past by other larger companies and really seeing what's possible, taking those wells from an operating expense of, you know, X, moving it to Y, where it allows the well to live a longer life and also to be able to maximize the value of those assets. Presidio operates almost 3,000 wells in the Western Anadarko Basin. We have almost 3,100 wells we have a non-op interest in. And so all of that is tied into what we think is the opportunity to take these wells to the grave and efficiently operate them and until they're all of the maximum, all the carbon hydrocarbons have been maximized. So that's where a lot of folks may say that, and Presidio is different in that it does.
Well, what's the secret sauce for you guys? I mean, it's got to be how you pick where you go into, wouldn't you say, Colby?
I think that some of these legacy basins, like the Anadarko Basin, Western Anadarko Basin, are ripe for opportunities to explore and examine what's possible. And when you get to look at some of these assets and you use your experience in places that sometimes that are around these assets too, then you can look and see how what's possible from using your experience. And then, you know, what you do is you take these assets from, you know, using that experience from something that, you know, looks like what it could be to what it is. And next thing you know, you have a, a well that was a P&A candidate that's likely, you know, another 4 or 5 years down the road, it still produces. Right. And how you pick these assets is really a combination of multiple things, but you know, pricing matters. I'm the marketing guy. So the first thing, of course, I say is pricing. And then, you know, technology. Presidio has been developing its own proprietary technology to examine and analyze some of these all of these wells. And we use that technology as well to examine other acquisition opportunities. So that's how we pick this stuff. We operate it as efficiently as possible when we get our hands on it, and we hold on to it and baby it until it can't be babied anymore.
Baby till it quits burping. That's a whole new slogan, man. I mean, that would be a t-shirt waiting to happen.
Yeah, for sure. And we do a lot of things different. I mean, we did a reality show last year in 2022, featuring and highlighting some of the folks who actually do the work that I'm talking about, as opposed to just talking about it. And it's really insightful. You can Google it and check it out, and you can see how Presidio really does what it says it's doing, and just a lot of fun if you're interested in consuming oil and gas or energy.
All right. What was the name of the show again?
You can just Google Presidio Petroleum reality show or Digital Wildcat. Produce the shout out to Digital Wildcat.
Absolutely. That'd be great.
And it was really great.
Now on your website, Colby, I don't want to give you a compliment or anything, but this is cool. This is a good line, and that is, the energy transition relies on fossil fuels. Do you know how really, really relevant that one? I have not heard it articulated that well and that succinctly, and I'm hoping you came up with it, because I don't want to give anybody else the credit here, but that's pretty cool.
So Will Ulrich and Chris Hammack, our co-CEOs, really put that together back in 2017, 2018, when they were
founding
the company. They founded the company together. They had a prior history of working together, right, and found the company in 2017, did the first deal and bought some assets in the Western Anadarko Basin for Mid-States in 2018, Apache in 2019, Templar in 2020. And they're the genesis, if you will, of all of that. And I joined in late 2019, just after the Apache acquisition, and it's been a great relationship ever since.
You know, with the ESG movement and taking money out of E&P operators for being able to go out and say, hey, let's take that money. And then you have BP and you have Exxon, you have all the big guys giving all the money back to the investors. There is so much money that's needed to go into drilling programs. Oil prices are going to go up. I mean, there's almost no guarantee that it's going to be a low number. What are you seeing coming around the corner there?
Yeah, I think a lot of our philosophy at Presidio, and something I'm akin to, is to make money first. And really, that's the way it's been for me and my approach. I think it makes a lot of sense, too.
Oh, yeah.
Ever since I got in the business, I was confused as to what the goal was. But I think it's still to make money. And maybe deploying capital, investing capital, is something that you do if it makes economic sense. But I've been a part of the largest bankruptcy in E&P history, Lynn Energy, and the most controversial bankruptcy in E&P history, Alta Mesa. I've seen it all, and I think that it really hardened my approach to, you know, making money and cash flow first. And so I agree, though, the investment needs to be made in the energy industry. You know, we talk about transitioning all the time. Well, transition is required, because as we all know, and it's just a reminder that fossil fuels are a finite resource. And I mean, one day we're going to have to do something different anyway. Not that I know what exactly that is. But as most of the folks who follow me on LinkedIn know, at the Energy Marketing Pro, not a big believer that that's going to be wind or solar. And that's the money coming into that could be better spent on research and technology and as opposed to things that I think are not even probably a bridge to what's next. Fossil fuels too will always be produced. And you talked about pricing. I'm one of the few people that have a pricing forecast. Most people follow the banks, and I have my own. If you look me up on the LinkedIn, Energy Marketing Pro, you can find my forecast for the 2023 for crude and natural gas. And it really started out of a friend of mine and I said, hey, let's see who can beat the other and who can get closest 1 year. And that was about 5 years ago. And I won. And then we started just doing it together. And then I started publishing it in the public. And so I share it now every year in late December, between Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I don't change it. I put it out there for all the folks to cuss and discuss and roast. And I get a lot of it. I get a lot of roast.
Let me ask you things, because I'm being at OSU, I have to use a crayon. So, when I do my kind of stuff out there, my head's exploded over the last several years trying to come up with, I hate the word unprecedented, but you now have the geopolitical forces at play. You have, Russia, you have the sanctions, which don't work. And then you have Saudi Arabia and everybody trying to move the dollar away from, off the oil off of the dollar and go to India and rubles. And they just have all this going on. I mean, it's just not supply and demand anymore. I mean, there is a huge thing in there. How are you taking all of that in? And, what do you think 2023 is going to be? So there's two questions. I get excited to talk about oil and gas and energy. I think you can tell. But what are those? How do you handle those kind of things in there, Colby?
I think that geopolitical factors have always been something that needs to be considered with respect to oil pricing, more so temperatures and and for natural gas, and temperatures couldn't be any milder. So when people wonder if there's why is gas $2.50? So they just need to look outside to wonder. the natural gas business relies on winter. It exists because of winter. And without winter, there isn't a natural gas business.
Wow.
Incredibly, way more than we consume in the summer, and it's the opposite effect in the winter. But without with milder temperatures comes higher storage and things like that that we just we have to consider. Texas last month reported that they produced more natural gas in 2022 than ever before. These are things going super heavy on natural gas, and you can see across the world how production continues to climb. With respect to oil, and your point's valid, I mean, about crude prices rising, we have now 8 billion people on the planet, and all of them want more and more energy and more access. And the ones who don't have access to energy want access to energy. And I think that's something that far be it from us to keep them from that access. I think as the population continues to grow, more and more fossil fuels will need to be produced, regardless of how much investment we're going to make in wind and solar. So when you make a forecast like I do, I consider a multitude of factors and make some assumptions that this is going to happen, that's going to happen. I mean, 2 years ago, I said that Russia would play a bigger and bigger part in OPEC, and it turns out it's true, and things went really well. Last year, I didn't, though, account for Russia actually invading Ukraine. So that messed with the pricing forecast for 2022 for sure. Right. But there's a multitude of factors. Supply and demand, of course, is one of them. And that's the biggest one for sure in crude oil. And, the world continues to come out of COVID lockdowns in such a way that they're going to, they're going to be traveling more. They're getting out more. And that's that's good. But on the other side, a headwind is recession, growing inflation, and crude oil is the most vulnerable product to recession. Right. And so if you look at my forecast for 2023, you can see that I have the price of crude oil in finishing out 2023 in the high $50 range.
Woo! And that's due to the recession, which in my opinion was caused by printing of global money to go green.
We printed a ton of money during COVID, almost $8 trillion as a country here in the United States. And that's got to be accounted for. And we continue to see record job numbers, of course, because the economy grew a ton. Right. And continues to grow while inflation continues to slightly grow, albeit muted more so than it was 6 months ago. And rising interest rates are meant to slow the economy, and they are. And inflation, I know, is impacting folks' spending habits already, and discretionary and disposable incomes. Is becoming more and more of a conversation around the dinner table these days.
Oh, it is. Do we eat? First thing, nobody goes to movies, and then you cut all those kind of things out. And that OU football behind you is now about a $50,000 football because the pigskin is expensive now. So, I mean, it's amazing what inflation does. But I didn't mean to cut you off there. Colby, when you go through this number, Goldman Sachs there's a knucklehead over there at Goldman Sachs, and he's saying 150 still. And if you're at that 50, 53, I'm going to take the middle. I don't know. It ain't going to go this high. And I think everybody is betting on China really having this much more demand. But I think that those are going to be even too high. I don't think China's demand is going to be as big of an impact on the demand. So I think we're somewhere around over you and then down over here. And so last year, I thought we were going to be a lot higher. I knew we were going to hit 100, 110, and it popped right back down. But yeah. I'd like to know who in the world that Goldman Sachs guy is. He's out there saying it's 150, and he's holding a rock down and everything else. I wonder what reports he's reading.
I'm keenly interested in doing hedges and selling them crude oil at $150. And if you can give him my number, I would absolutely appreciate that, because all the things that I see are rising production, a global economy that's slowing deliberately, and that's going to reduce demand for crude oil across the world. And I'm just not as optimistic as they are that we'll see $100 again. Or even something, what we're seeing now at the end of 2023. We have Venezuela trying to get organized again. We have Russia, who's just going to produce as much as they possibly can to fund the war in Ukraine, despite what OPEC plus quotas are going to be. And OPEC has signaled that they're ending the production cuts. So, I mean, what I see is just more and more supply, and how is demand in 23 going to grow? I don't know. I just know that we're a lot better at finding new supply than we are at finding new demand.
Wow. I'm going to compliment you on that one. Wow. We're a lot better at finding new supply than we are demand.
Yeah, it's just been a way that the business has grown deliberately over the last 40 years. And, we've reached over 100 million barrels a day of consumption globally. And with expectation in 2023 that'll grow. But what, you know, at what pace, and it won't be at the pace. It can be something less, I think, than the pace of supply. And, you know, I'm optimistic as always. I mean, you have to be a perpetual optimist to be in this business. And with the ups comes the downs, and we just had an up. And I've seen too many times in the cycle what's on the other side.
Right. Oh, yeah. What goes up must come down. And if it goes up really high, it comes down really, really low. But so as we sit here, and I'm going to go check your pricing models out, and I want to stay in touch with you because, you know, I think people that get this kind of stuff in their blood love to talk about this kind of stuff in their blood. And I want to hear your thoughts on your things that come in, because I've been fairly accurate, but boy, I did not get natural gas right this year at all. I mean, I missed it totally. I didn't think that it would be this low. In the past 7 years, it had never had this pattern before.
Yeah, you and me both. My forecast for 2023 looks higher than $4, and we're not even close to $4. And no. I think what most folks understand is that whether you believe in climate change or not, you can look outside and know that winter is somewhat less than what it was on average. And I mean, what happened? What's happening is the you know, that's driving the price of natural gas down as we continue to add more and more supply. And the storage report 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago, showed the first ever build in natural gas storage during withdrawal season. So whether you're a climate change person or not, the numbers and the data say that the demand is way down for natural gas, and it's as a result of milder temperatures.
Well, now LNG Asia is really, I love our U.S. export LNG. Go, gang, go. I love everything they got. You know, you take the port of Corpus Christi and Cheniere. I love all of our guys exporting everything they possibly can. But our regulations have made it almost impossible for trying to figure out on how to grow our exports for LNG. LNG is one of the best single natural gas, and then subsequently LNG is one of the best energy things to elevate humanity out of poverty. Natural gas. I'm all about elevating humanity out of poverty. And natural gas is critical. How can we improve our exports of natural gas without getting better regulations? What are your thoughts on that, Bad Doug?
Yeah, so we've come a long ways in 7 years. We have no LNG business, export business whatsoever. Everybody was thinking 10 years ago about it, imports, and it's really taken off, and that outlet has been tremendous for our business. It allowed us to weather some storms that wouldn't have been possible otherwise, and set an artificial floor for natural gas. It's been tremendous. And you mentioned, you know, unlocking, you know, energy poverty, and unlocking energy poverty is only going to be possible with delivering more and more fossil fuels to the places that need it the most. I think long-term U.S.-produced products are to fuel the world. And it for the last 100 years, this business, the U.S. oil and natural gas business has fueled the United States, and in 2015 and now beyond, in the long term, it's going to fuel the world. I wouldn't be too concerned with the government coming to take your job anytime soon. In fact, I think it's going to grow. And I just know that when you look around the world and you see the population growing and you see that 3 billion people on Earth live, you know, on less energy than your refrigerator, then that's got to change, and it's going to change. And more people are going to demand, again, more and more energy.
Right. But you know, the I love that Freeport just came back online. That's cool. You know, I can't remember off the top of my head. It's a bunch. Thank you. Yes, that's a lot. I mean, that's a lot of going down that pipeline. And so, when we take a look, what's next for Presidio? What's coming around the corner for you guys?
Yeah, Presidio is a deliberate company. We try to execute on the best and possible investments for our capital dollars. So what's next is continuing to execute on our game plan of efficiently operating the wells we have, looking around at the acquisition market to grow the business, and if there's an opportunity on our legacy acres to drill, certainly we're considering doing that, and we're doing some deals as we speak, and considering others that allow drilling on our acreage. Nice. And there's some stuff we worked on for technology-wise that we'd like to market commercially soon. And Presidio is filled with entrepreneurs. Chris and Will spend a tremendous amount of time building an employee base that looks for what's possible, what can be achieved, as opposed to keeping things going. Yep. And we have several patents on several products that we're going to market commercially. Presidio is what's next for Presidio is a lot of different things, but it's investments in oil and gas primarily.
Sounds great. Now, Colby, what's next for you?
Yeah, I'm a career energy marketer. What I went to school to do, it's what I've done for 23 years. With my girlfriend's an energy marketer. We try not to talk business ever, usually at home. But what's next for me is that, that's what I'll do. And hopefully, be successful and as much as possible, be able to, leverage all the things that I've learned to share with the next generation.
Boy, that sounds fabulous. And I just really get tickled about you and your girlfriend, because you're a house divided. She's from OSU, Oklahoma State University. You both are oil marketers, but yet you're from OU and you're out of the first group that was doing that. I'll tell you what, I don't know which is worse. Have you ever gone to dinner with someone from the medical profession and all bodily functions are off the table? I mean, they can talk about anything. So you guys have got to have some boundaries, I bet.
Yeah, I think we do, for sure. When we're together, we probably talk business at conventions and conferences and meetings and stuff like that. I'm the president of Natural Gas and Energy Association of Oklahoma, and when we're together, we certainly at those events and with others, we'll talk about talk business. But other than that, it's we get enough of it to fill our day. So we have a real estate business together too that we do. So that usually consumes 99% of our conversations each day.
How fun. That is. Thank you so much, Colby, for stopping by the podcast. And we'll have all this out in the show notes, all your contact information, and get all that out there to the folks.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks.